All right, so this is lesson 9, chapter 9. I know that your homework, you also did 9 and 10. Today I'm only going to talk about the sanctuary, which is really the first part of chapter 9. The sacrifices will be 9 and 10, and that will be the week after next that we'll talk about the sacrifices. So a better sanctuary. So let me start with this. The way Eastern minds think is completely different than the way Western minds think in all of history. It's always been that way. Eastern mind, of course, was first, since that's where civilization began. But Eastern mind, Western mind tends to think in words to describe things. They think in specific words. Oh, yes, this is this, this is this. Whereas Eastern mind tends to think in pictures. So if you are to ask a Westerner, describe God for me, and they've done this, and they will say things like, God is omnipotent, God is powerful, God is love, right? So we have these words that we say, these concrete words, this is who God is. When you ask an Eastern mind the same thing, they will say, God is a shepherd, God is a king. God is thunder. So you see the difference? They think in pictures. So most of Scripture, particularly Old Testament, is written in pictures. It is not just written in pictures. It's how God actually has revealed himself in pictures. It's why most Westerners first go, oh, the New Testament, that's all you need. Because it's just didactic teaching. It's just words. You know, it's just do this, love your enemy, do this, do that. But the Old Testament has these rich, rich words that just have flavors in them that is lacking in our language. In fact, the funny thing is, it's our language that is so imprecise that we use when they have these beautiful pictures, because they do have an imprecise language as well. New Testament switched over a little bit more toward Eastern thought. That's where Hellenistic thought started coming in, and all the philosophers and everything. That's how the New Testament is innuendoed, and where we kind of start thinking from the Enlightenment is in words and ideas. So Hebrews is the one book in the New Testament that's really an Old Testament book. That's why it's so much more difficult to teach Hebrews within the context of the New Testament, because it is really an Old Testament book in the New Testament context. So it's very different. It's why it's, I think, very difficult for anybody to go through it, and why how many of you ever have had a preacher go through the book of Hebrews? Nope. Yeah, that's a pretty tough one. It's pretty tough to go through. Because it's in such a different way than we think. So all that to say, we're studying the sanctuary today, and the sanctuary is really a picture that God has revealed to us and to his people at first. So as we look at the better priest that we have in Jesus serving in a better sanctuary, we really need to understand from the Hebrew mindset the sanctuary in pictures. And when I first saw, oh, we're going to do the sanctuary, we've done the tabernacle a million times. How many more? I mean, what did we do in Leviticus? We built our own, right? Mm-hmm. We built our own tabernacles. So I thought, well, we're not going to do that. So I did get out my old, the pieces. I didn't put it together, as you can see, tabernacle. So we're first going to look at the picture of the sanctuary, and then we'll kind of go from there. What we really need to do is to understand that God gives this picture, and he gives it little by little by little, and the picture grows and grows. And I think you'll be fascinated at how the picture that he develops for us begins and how it grows. When we look at it from this perspective, I think it's really exciting, especially for those of us who know the tabernacle so well, you can kind of walk through it in your sleep. Is there anybody here who's never, ever studied the tabernacle and the pieces of the tabernacle? So everybody kind of knows the pieces, yes? Excellent.
One quick question.
Yeah.
Do we have an equivalent for how high a cubit a measurement for?
They think the length of a man's arm.
No, I think it's. I thought it was from your finger to your elbow.
Well, I've heard a couple different things. They don't know for sure, but it's some part of the man's arm. We don't know. Okay, so the materials of the sanctuary, of the tabernacle that we know of. And I guess I do have a picture in the Bible here. Somewhere there's. Okay, so that was perhaps what the tabernacle looked like. Although as I look at it, I go, yeah, there's a couple things a little off, but you know, it's funny. Every time you go and find a picture that they try to bring it back, there's one thing off. And not because it's off, it's just because it's sparse information that we have. But yeah, right. That's right. Yeah, I know. I thought about that when she said that. So the pieces, the material, where I'm going to ask, since most of us know this, first of all, where did the materials come from? Yeah, gifts, right? They were all gifts. None of it belonged to them. It was all gifts that God made sure that the Egyptians gave them. The tabernacle was put together and by skilled craftsmen, it says. Where did they get those skills?
From working in Egypt.
From working in slavery, right? Right. So again, we always are seeing this. What looks like really hard stuff is really a gift. And God sees the big picture. So we see just in those two little things, the fact that they have all this material and skills, all because they were in slavery, to be able to build a place that is going to hold God. It also has in the tabernacle precious metals and jewels, mostly gold, bronze and gold, but a lot of gold. Which tells you why it took them so long to get through the desert, if they're carrying all this gold. But it also had a lot of precious jewels. And the main characteristic that you need to know of the jewels and the metals are that they are highly reflective. So that was the main use of them. And in their highly reflective state, of course, they are absolutely beautiful. If you have any of those without anything to reflect from, they look very ordinary. Just if you see a diamond without it being lit, it looks like a piece of coal. Gold in darkness doesn't look any different than any other thing. So all of these things, their characteristic of being reflective is part of their beauty. We also then have linen and skins. Linen, always notice how plain the linen is. That is always an indication of humanity, flesh, as are all the skins. We have several skins that go over the holy place. And those are all different kinds of skins. And every time I think about skins, because one of them is a dolphin skin, I always think, I mean, obviously, there were dolphins in the Mediterranean at some point, or in the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. So, and then we have the materials that make up the inside. So the material, this is the outside. This is the gate or the fence that goes all the way around. And then this material would have gone on the inside of the holy place and the Holy of Holies. And that is always made of blue and purple and scarlet, purposely, first most, to reflect sky, and you'll see why in a minute. So that, although we always look at it as reflecting royalty, mm-hmm. which it does, there was a foundational meaning, and that was to reflect sky. Mm-hmm. So those are the materials of the sanctuary. There are also layers of the sanctuary, which we've never really talked about before, but in this case we need to understand that God developed this picture. So there's three layers in the sanctuary, and there's lots of different ways we can talk about the layers, But the main idea, and this was just a very common way to do temples, the main idea is that the outer court, so the outer court that's outlined by the linen, which remember is man, the outer court reflects the earth. That's where man lives. So the outer court is earth. When we go into the Holy of Holies, or the Holy Place, the first section of the Holy Place, right here, reflect. Now that we have all the material that has sky, that reflects the heavens that can be seen. So we can see them, we can see the sky and the clouds, we can't quite live there, but they're visible. So it reflects that. But then we have a curtain, a veil, that shuts off what's the next place. And the next place represents the unseen world, where God lives. So we have where man lives, then we have this kind of middle ground where man can see, but not quite get there. And then we have the place that's completely shut off that we cannot see at all. So that's the three different layers of the tabernacle, the temple, and such.
Jill,
yeah.
I meant to look up the word tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
Does the outer court and the Holy of Holies, is that whole thing a tabernacle?
They do call the whole thing a tabernacle. But then they also refer to just the holy place as the tabernacle. Tabernacle means to dwell. It's a dwelling place.
Okay.
So that's what it means. So that'll become a little more clear as we actually watch God develop the picture as to where that is. There's a reason it seems kind of fuzzy right now of where is the real dwelling place. So now we go into the furniture. So I'm going to ask you about the furniture. What's the first thing? Well, let's talk about the linen fence. The linen fence, I've already told you, is made of linen, white plain linen, so that it's humanity. What's the very first thing you're going to encounter if you're going to go into the tabernacle?
The gate.
The gate, or the door, right. And it's purposely very wide. It's a very wide door. Anybody know what direction it faces?
East.
It faces east, which is important. Outside of the door, the east door, Moses and Aaron had their tent, but what tribe? Anybody know what tribe camped outside the east gate? Mm-mm, yeah, you would think, wouldn't you?
Judah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, tribe of Judah. Okay, so we have the east gate that is a very wide open gate. What's the next thing that we encounter? The bronze altar. Sometimes it was an earthen altar, sometimes it was bronze altar, depending. But bronze was also a very common metal and therefore looked at as a very earthy metal, a very human type thing. So it's very representative of human right there. So we have the bronze altar. And then what comes after the bronze altar? The bronze laver, okay? Anybody have any other idea what else they've called that?
A baptismal font.
Anybody ever hear it called the sea? Or the sea?
The
S-E-A, yeah. Sea basin, it is. Mm-hmm. It's often called that as well. So we have the bronze altar and we have the sea basin. What happened at the sea basin?
Saw your reflection.
Who did?
When the people would come in?
Not the people weren't allowed there. The priests.
Oh, the priests.
Right. What'd they do in there?
They washed,
right, before they could go into the holy place. So that is the first layer. And since that is what's in the first layer, where again is the first layer? What is it representative of?
The earth.
The earth. Okay. So we have the earth with the altar and the washing the sea. Having this picture of earth and seas, just like what's on the earth, earth and seas. Now we walk into the holy place, which is the bigger section of the tabernacle. And we have, what is the first thing you see? And it would be on your left-hand side. The lampstand. Okay, describe the lampstand for me.
Seven?
Candle holders.
Yeah, let's have a different name of that. What are those called?
Branches.
Branches. Seven branches, okay. And what did you say, Kristen?
Like almond buds.
Yep, they have almond buds.
And gold. It's covered in gold.
And it's covered in gold, yep.
It's like an oil lamp, not like a candle.
Right, right. So it has oil in it, and the candles are lit. As we see there, it, because of the shape of it and what's on it, does it resemble anything to you?
A tree.
Yeah, yeah. So we have a tree-shaped candelabra that produces, that has oil in it and has light coming out of it. The next thing on your right would be what?
The
table of showbread. Explain that.
A loaf of bread for each tribe. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the table, 3 cubits, or 1.5 cubits high.
Ooh.
Shorter.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Covered in gold. It's acacia wood.
Yep.
Covered in gold.
Okay, good. Okay, good.
The priest ate that bread every week.
Right, right. So there was definitely somewhere baking facilities. We don't really know where. So we have our candelabra and our lampstand and our table of showbread. Any other name for table showbread or the bread itself?
Bread of life, or
they called it the bread of the presence. Yeah, the bread of the presence.
I looked at my notes.
Okay, and then directly in front of you, if you came in, the altar of incense. Tell me about that.
Continually had incense. Well, I think they put new on twice a day, and it would waft over into the Holy of Holies.
Mm-hmm.
A specific recipe.
Yep.
And it was interesting in the notes how it said, it was a little confusing that it seemed like it might be inside the Holy of Holies, but how would they?
Yeah, if they had to prepare it every day, they wouldn't be able to get in there.
That's interesting, too. There's a reason why it's a little bit vague there.
Okay.
Basically, it's sat in the holy place. But remember when the high priest on the Day of Atonement would actually go into the Holy of Holies, he had to bring that incense in. And so there was a movable part of it, a censer, that would have brought it in there. So it actually, interesting, could go in and out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it would only go in once a year, right?
It would only go in once a year, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, so then what's the next? Okay, so that's the second layer. And that second layer is? The sky or the heavens, what we can see. What's the very next thing that we come to?
The veil.
The veil. Explain that. Describe it.
Dark.
It was definitely thick.
Not dark.
Well, it's of all the same colors. It's blue, scarlet, and purple. Anybody know what else it had embroidered on it? We talked about this in Leviticus.
Pomegranates? Or no?
Pomegranate, yeah. What else?
Mm-hmm. Bells on
it? No.
It didn't have wings.
But wings.
Angels?
Yeah. So it had cherubs on it as well. That's important. We talked about this in Leviticus, that it actually had cherubs on it when we think about the veil. And it was very thick. So that it could not be torn by a man. And it was always closed off, completely closed, that. So this whole area is in blues. Just try to picture this. In blues and scarlets and purples. And there is gold everywhere. And there is a lamp flickering all the time. So you have this idea of really the night sky with these flickering lights reflecting off everything. So that's kind of that picture that you have there.
Sound like the lamp was lit all the time, only at night.
Yeah. No, the lamp was lit all the time. It was always kept lit. All the time. Always kept. They had to go in and make sure that the oil was always in there, lit. After the veil, we go into the Holy of Holies.
So would that
give them like some sense of the Abrahamic covenant when they're in there or something. Do you know what I mean? This whole like night sky, the light.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The cloud.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of different things. Yeah, lots of different things. We'll see that, I think, in a few minutes. Inside of the Holy of Holies, what do we have?
The Ark of the Covenant.
The Ark of the Covenant. So describe that.
Acacia wood, covered in gold.
Mm-hmm.
4 feet,
mm-hmm.
with four rings at each feet, and poles covered in gold that are to be left in the rings,
mm-hmm.
for moving.
Right.
And then the Ark of the Covenant inside, or the testimony.
So, okay, so let's talk about what was inside?
The testimony, or the...
Aaron's testimony, which is what do we usually call the testimony?
Ten Commandments.
Ten Commandments, or the Old Covenant. Mm-hmm. And let's just, okay, Aaron's rod, and what else?
And
the jar of manna. Okay, so let's just describe those three things. Jar of manna being the, obviously they had taken some of the manna that they'd been fed in the desert, right? What's the rod? Aaron's rod. Do you remember how that came to be? Mm-hmm. What did it have?
A bud. Yeah. Well, actually a big branch
bud
with the flowers on it.
Yeah. We always say the rod that budded, but remember when we looked at it in Leviticus? It didn't just bud. It completely flowered and had almonds on it. It was full. So it had leaves and buds and flowers and almonds all together. And then the testimony or the old covenant. Anybody tell me? Describe that just a little bit. See if you remember this.
The old covenant?
Yeah. What?
They were two stone.
They were two stone,
yep.
tablets with the Ten Commandments written on both of them. Because
yep.
it was a covenant between man and God.
Right. So remember, we always see that there were two. And somebody decided somewhere along the line that that means that five were on one and five were on the other. Not so. There were two copies of the same thing. One copy was God's copy and one copy was man's copy. This is the agreement. This is the contract we've made. Mm-hmm. And the fact that both of them are kept in the same place mm-hmm. says what? Mm-hmm. This is where God lives. God lives in the same place man lives right now with that. So remember that as well, because that's a beautiful picture that this is where God lives. Mm-hmm. What's on top of the ark? Mercy seat, again covered in gold with cherubs guarding it on top.
Okay, so
yep.
Wait, the mercy seat. Was there any like additional piece of gold, or that's just
yep.
the section? That's just the area. It's called.
The mercy seat is actually a lid, so it would be
lid?
Like it's the lid.
Seat.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that.
I didn't know if it was an additional like.
No, it's just. Actually, if you ever watch any, you know, any mummy Egyptian things,
yeah.
they all have the same kind of thing. And it's like, it looks like a coffin.
Okay.
But it has that lid. That's the mercy seat. Yeah. So the mercy seat, what do we know about the mercy seat?
Well, it has the cherubs to kind of go on it and with their wings outspread, and
mm-hmm.
they're facing each other and looking towards the center.
Okay. Okay, good.
And
God dwells in between. Now, here's one of the things we need to remember from some of the passages through. Is God completely sitting there, or is only part of him there? It talks about in Hebrews, it talks about in Psalms, it talks about many places that this is actually
his
footstool. This is his footstool. So that it's only part of the throne. And then we have... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Then we have what's on top of all of that?
The Shekinah glory.
So the cloud of his presence. So the fact that it kind of tells us that's where he is. There. I wish I would have drug this out. There was a beautiful song that we sing that talks about his robe covers the earth. Oh, I can't think about it. Yes. Yeah, that's it. I love that song, and that always makes me cry. Yeah, right. So that's that picture of the robe kind of covering there, so that we see part of his dwelling there. So, and the reason we kind of need to understand that that's his footstool is to realize that his full presence is not there.
Yeah.
His presence is there, but it's not fully developed there.
We'd be dead.
They would have been, yeah. So that's kind of the picture that we have in our mind. Now what I want to do is I want to start from the beginning of where God started to develop the pictures and showed what goes on. So let's go back to the very beginning, which we always do in the garden. So we're going to talk about the original sanctuary, because we always think the original sanctuary is the tabernacle. But let's look at the garden and realize that the tabernacle was actually a model of the garden. So what we see there is that the whole purpose God creating was for him to have a place to put his glory, to have his glory fill everything, and to be able to share that glory and make it grow. Let that glory grow and grow and grow. It's one of the aspects of his glory that we don't talk about, that it's not a static thing, but that he wants it to continue to fill and grow. So he develops and creates a garden place for this, for his glory, for his dwelling, for his presence. So when we talk about glory, it's the same as dwelling and his presence and him being there. So he creates a garden to be there, because a garden is a place of growing. So it's a place that he assumes or that he creates for a purpose of growth and the growth of his glory. So when we think about Eden, we talk so much about restoring Eden. When he even restores Eden, it's not a static place. It's meant to grow and expand and be bigger. That was his whole thing. So even the Eden we know wasn't complete because it's still growing. That's what he wants it to do. We always think about Eden, at least I do, I always think about Eden as a flat garden. But in Ezekiel, when it talks about, it's actually talking about one of the angels having been there, the perfect, most perfect angel being created. I put you down in my garden on a mountain. So it's actually a mountain garden that Eden is. Yeah, we don't think about that very much. But we know that it was a mountain. So when we're what I want us to do is, as we're thinking about this garden as being the first sanctuary, think about then the tabernacle and how it begins to reflect that. So on a mountain, we have it's better displayed in the temple here. But when we have the very first thing in the temple, what do we have? Yeah, but it's actually not stairs. It's a. It looks like a little mountain. Mm-hmm. So we have that there in the altar, which was often called an earthen altar. The garden, Eden, was a place where God dwelt with man in harmony, and man dwelt in harmony with man and beast and all creation. So that's what we know of Eden. That's what we kind of picture of Eden, and that wholeness or that shalom, that peace. We also know from Genesis, we're just looking at Genesis basically, Genesis 2, 1 and 2, is that God's own light illumined. Now, I always think this is funny because we always go, well, no, it was the sun and the moon. But when were the sun and the moon created? Yeah, day 4. And it said there was light. On day one, what light? God's light, himself. So we have God's light in the Garden of Eden being the first thing that illuminates. Those other things come after. We then have in the garden, and all I'm doing is following Genesis 2. I'm just describing from Genesis 2. The next thing it talks about is that there was the tree of life in the garden. And we've already talked about the fact that the candlestick is a representation of the tree of life. It's why it is a tree with branches. So we have this tree of life. Yes.
Seven.
Why? Anybody know? Perfect number. Yep. It always means seven. Always means completion for the scripture. And then we'll start talking about where else are there seven branches of a candlestick. What?
It also means oath.
Oath. Yes. Right. Promise. A promise of fullness of completion. Okay. So we have a tree of life, and in Genesis 2 it says this tree of life, if eaten, produces eternal life. It gives life. And it says it's freely. How does he say in Genesis? You may freely eat of this. So there is no boundaries around the tree in Eden. There are no requirements. It doesn't say make sure you wash your hands first. It doesn't say, you know, make sure you're this high. There are no measurements to be able to eat from the tree. It just says, eat freely of the tree. So that's what we have in Eden. We also have in Eden a river that flows out of it. And that produces then four other branches. So we have a river in Eden that flows out. Do we have any place of rivers here?
The sea basin,
mm-hmm. which in the tabernacle is contained. Right? Contained into a smaller area. We also have in Eden, I think we looked at this in Leviticus and we're kind of surprised, that in Eden the whole land is filled with gold. Mm-hmm. And gold, and the gold of the land is good gold, delium and onyx stone, which are both precious stones. So in Eden we have the gold and the stones. Which, of course, we have in here. Not only do we have the gold around all everything, where are the stones? Where are the precious stones in the tabernacle? Yeah, they're on the priest, on that square ephod.
It's all reflected then, too, I guess, in Eden with God walking around in there.
Yeah, yeah. And then we have, in Eden, we have God mandating man to do what? What's he to do?
Be fruitful,
fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Fill the earth with what?
I guess I would think other
people. Yeah.
Their
mm-hmm.
offspring.
And who is this man? What is he a container of? Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth with my image, mm-hmm. with my glory, mm-hmm. with my presence. Mm-hmm. So what we have then is the first priest, whose whole purpose is to be a true witness, to be, hey, here's what God looks like. Here's God's presence and God's glory, and I'm supposed to fill the earth with it and make his glory be found farther and farther and filled more and more. So as we look at Eden now, and then we look at the tabernacle, we realize that there is this picture specifically put that looks like Eden to say, I have always created a place for me to dwell with you. Now, what happened in Eden? They decided that they were going to hide from his presence, right? They chose something different than being in his presence, and then they hide from his presence. Now, there could have been a lot of different things they did, but they didn't. They hid from his presence. And therefore, God said, you've chosen to hide from my presence. I will take my presence away from you. So we now have a separation between God's presence and man. And in the tabernacle, where's the separation between God's presence and man?
The veil.
The veil. What's on the veil?
Angels.
Angels. What's at Eden? What protects Eden? The fiery angels. The angels with the fire, with the scarlet color. So here we have this picture in the tabernacle of what has happened and the separations that have happened because of what man has chosen, and his choice is to be outside of the presence of God, outside of the sanctuary. So what I want us to begin to key on then is, so now we know that this is where the sanctuary began, the dwelling place of God began. God takes away his presence because man chooses that. And now I want us to watch how God says, but that's not the end of the story. I will have my presence fill the earth. And I'm going to do it little by little so that you can receive it again. And every time I want us to watch what happens, what's man's response to it, what happens to God's presence as we go. So after Eden, we have Genesis, we have the story of Noah. God is now separate from man. And we have in Noah's story that God actually looks down now. So, and all that indicates is that, remember, Hebrews think in pictures. It doesn't mean necessarily that God is in a direction of up. It means God is separate from man, and he's looking at man. He's not coming to man. He's now looking at man. But he sees that the distance between him and man is multiplying, because it says that man was evil continually. And remember, we talked about evil. We always think about evil as a certain act, but evil is actually that choice of being separate from God, from ruling myself, from being independent, so being away from his presence. And he's seeing that man's heart is evil continually going away from his presence over and over, more and more distance. But God looks at that and says, it's not what I want. It's not what's good for man. It's not the way my glory can be filling all places. So he sends then Noah what? What does he give Noah? Yeah, a pattern to make another box, which that's the word, box for ark. But he makes him an ark. But where do we call it an ark as well, even though the word is really box. Where is the box here?
The ark.
It's in there. Okay, so he looks and he says right away, I am going to send you a box to save you so that we can start again. Because he says then to Noah, as soon as Noah is saved in the box and he comes out, and where does he land? On a mountain. And he says, now go out, and he gives him the exact same mandate he gave Adam. Go, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth with my glory. Mm-hmm. So we have the same thing here. We then go, of course, into the story of Abraham and Moses. Now God does more than just look at man and send them a box. He comes down occasionally. So with Abraham, we have him coming down several times, about 12 times really, and actually appearing to him. Just a few times. We have him speaking to both Abraham and Moses. Where does he speak to Abraham?
In the tent.
Abraham in the tent, yep. So interesting, in a tent. And then where?
Outside at night,
yep. Where's the biggest story that we always think about Abraham?
Mount Moriah,
which is really, what would they call it in the Old Testament?
It's Jerusalem. That's where
they it's Mount Zion. Mm-hmm. It's the same mount. This is where God speaks to him. So we have God coming down, appearing just every so often. So he's not staying, but he's coming down again. We have with Moses now 40 times that he actually appears with Moses. Mm-hmm. And Moses, where does he appear for Moses?
Sinai.
Mount Sinai. So again, we have these mountains. Mm-hmm. And remember, the Hebrew mind is pictures. So it's going, mountain, where's the first mountain?
Mm-hmm.
Eden. Mountain, we have Mount Zion. Mm-hmm. Moriah. Mountain, we have Mount Sinai. So there's all these mountains that are going to, for the Hebrews, remind them of the original sanctuary. And what we have God saying to Moses is, when, particularly in, they're still in Egypt, and he has going to start giving them the plagues, he says, I'm going to do this so that they will know that I am, or my presence, is in the midst of the land. At that point, all gods were considered to be gods of a certain portion of the land. And so God's going to say, no, I want them to know I am in the midst of the land now. So what we're talking about is his presence, and he's trying to get across, Moses, I want you to let the people know that I am in the midst of the land. So I'm not far away. I keep coming down here. When we finally get to Mount Sinai, he tells Moses to construct what? The tabernacle. So we have a tabernacle, a tent, and specifically the ark. So now we have another box. Moses, I want you to construct a tent and a box inside that tent. And on that box, I will come and dwell. And now I will not just be in the midst of the land. He says, I will be in the midst of my people on a box. We often describe that. They often describe that in the box. They really considered that that whole box felt like it carried some of the presence of God. That presence now, we have all of a sudden God has now returned and he is in a box, a very contained place, but with and in the midst of the people. And in fact, this is a movable tent and a movable box. Mm-hmm. Everything, though, is still, when they move all of these pieces of furniture, is anyone supposed to see this? Mm-hmm. Are they ever supposed to see it?
Like being moved.
Ever? Are they ever supposed to see this? They cover it when they move it with blue cloth. So all the pieces first get covered by blue cloth, and who is the one who covers them? The priests. They cover them in blue cloth and they move them. But what is significant for the Israelites is God has come back down here and he's moving with us. Mm-hmm. And this is thrilling that they can be in the presence of God. He's covered, he's cloaked, he's confined, but we are in the presence of God. And in fact, they get really scared when God says, you don't even want me here, I'm going to leave. And what does Moses say? No! Who will we be without your presence? So they definitely are thrilled that God has come back down and that his presence is in the midst of them. So we have the whole history of the Israelites, and they get into the promised land, and they have now kind of taken the box for granted, and they now begin to feel like it's a thing that they can use as a good luck charm. And so they say, well, let's bring it into battle with us. We're going against the Philistines. Let's bring it into battle. Because if we bring it into battle, we'll win. What does that sound like? A transaction? Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Oh, if we bring God here, then we'll win. Yeah. So... Right. So they bring God in the box into battle. What happens to God in the box? He's captured. They lose God. His presence leaves them. Because they looked at him as a transaction, a way to get things they want.
Yeah, wanted them to have like this picture so that they would be reminded it wasn't that he was actually there, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, what he's teaching them here is, I want to be with you, but you need to want to be with me, not for what you get out of it, not as a transaction.
Right.
So he's building in them little by little, you use me as a transaction? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about this. Is this not how we deal with God often? Mm-hmm. I want to use, if I pray I hate bumper stickers that say prayer changes things. Because that to me is, if I pray to God, then I'll get what I want. Which is not what Matthew talks about when he talks about that. We've gone through that. But what he's doing is giving them little picture by little picture so they begin to understand. So they basically trade in God in the box.
Was it also like a problem that they were taking him out of his place, right? Like his place in the earth, like where he dwells in relation to man and all these other pieces. Like they were taking him out of that into their own.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
So continue to think through how this is going. So we have God's presence continually. First he looks, then he comes in appearances a few times. Now he says, I'm going to live with you in a box here. And each time man's eventual response is, I'm going to hide from his presence. Now it's, well, I'm going to use his presence. Uh-huh. Now we get into the place where we get to David and Solomon. And God says, now I want you to build me a stable, solid building where the box of my presence can live. This is thrilling.
Did God initiate that idea, though, or did David?
No. David asked, and God said, no, I already have your son that will be preparing this. So he says, prepare me first a tent, then prepare a tent with a box. Prepare me now a building with a box where I will dwell. Now, this is thrilling to them because now God's presence is even more sure for them. Now it's not that it's moving around in a wilderness. Now it's with them living in their city that he's given them.
But they still see it confined to only being right there.
Absolutely. Only in the box.
But still, and it also goes, I mean, if you get it right, which I need to get it too, like, it goes from, I'm going to take you where I'm going, to I'm going to come to you.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So we have little by little by little, he's building all of this. But we have, once again, and as we have in the tabernacle, God actually comes. And we know that because the cloud of his presence, the Shekinah glory, and it always says, fills the tabernacle. It fills it completely. When Solomon builds the temple and he dedicates it, and then it says, the glory of the Lord filled the temple. And so God, he's ordained this. This is where I'm going to be. Now I'm going to be in this place that's a little more stable and a little more sure, but still very limited. But I'm going to be in this box. And so they have this beautiful temple, just like the tabernacle, just like the original sanctuary in Eden. And God fills this place. But eventually, again, we see through the history of Israel that they begin to kind of think about God's presence as, well, yeah, he's there, not a big deal. And I really want some other things, and they start to go toward all the idols of the land. Now, not just the people, but we've already seen how the priestly line has completely disintegrated into following idols of all kinds. The priestly idols, though, were not the ones of wood and stone. Excuse me, they were the ones of their heart, where they said, well, we're going to take the best, when people bring in the calves, we're going to take the best ones for ourselves. And we'll make them start paying for it. And so they began to be, remember we talked about, they built up their political clout and their political power and then their cultural power. And then it began to be a religion. It actually started that a long time before that.
And we've talked about this before. So like the money changing thing was more about
Right, right. So we have that, and so they completely disregard his presence now. It's just, they just take it for granted. Well, it's there, it's ours, but we're still going to start doing things on our own, and we're going to get things on our own, and we really want these things, so we're going to do that. So because of the idolatry of all sorts of ways, what we have then happening in Ezekiel is that his presence leaves again. So we had his presence leave when they used him as a talisman. It talks about that in 1 Samuel. Now we have in Ezekiel, it tells us that Ezekiel watches God's presence actually leave the temple. And when he leaves the temple, Ezekiel actually sees where he goes. And he leaves it by the east side, and he goes over a different mountain. Anybody know what mountain he goes over? It's actually a bigger mountain than Mount Zion, which is where the temple is right now. He goes over the Mount of Olives. That's where he leaves. He leaves. He sits there for a while watching. Like, do they even know that I'm gone? And that's a good question, because they don't. Because they go on as nothing. Well, not a big deal, because really, we have now taken the picture to be the real thing, right? So they don't even notice that here the presence of God is leaving by the east way over the Mount of Olives. Doesn't bother them. They let him leave. So we have God's presence leaving once again. So what we've had then is God in a garden, and then being said, well, we don't really need to be in your presence. And so his presence leaves, and he looks and says, oh, but you need my presence. I'm going to give you a box so we can start again. And then he leaves and comes. Every time he leaves, because they have in some way hidden from him, used him, disregarded him. Would somebody do me a favor? That might need to be signed for. Thank you, Jennifer. Every time he comes back, he gives them a place of where he's going to be, and it's going to be in a box. It's going to be in a movable box first, and then it's going to be in a box that's stable. And then, of course, we have 400 or 500 years where his presence is gone, and they don't even notice. They don't even notice that his presence is gone, because they've got the box. And then we have Jesus come on the scene.
Okay, can you go back to, they didn't know the presence was gone because they still had forms?
Yeah.
Well, they did all their rituals and regulations, right, and all their oral traditions and their laws.
They still had this. And he said he was going to live in the box.
Yeah.
So they had the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. We never let you out. Which is really good when we start thinking about that.
So that's scary.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Because so like, they thought they had God, and they didn't have him. They didn't even know that he had left.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Samson. I mean, I'm just thinking of all the times where God leaves and you think you have him and you really don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Is it really huge? Yeah. You don't have to bring it in. I just wanted to make sure we didn't have to sign for it. No, it's a printer.
Okay, so
it's a box.
It's like really, it's a box.
It's a big box at the perfect time.
So how do you like that if you're doing
it?
Keep it in.
I think
we
open it.
Well, perfect, because that's where we're at. Jesus comes. How does Jesus come?
In
a body, right?
Yeah.
Where is that body placed? In a box, but in an open box. And an open box that's a feeding trough. That's a place where people can eat. Yes. An open box that has no lid at all. And only has food inside. So we have Jesus coming as a body that's been prepared. And in fact, in Hebrews, we're going to come where Jesus says, you don't want sacrifices, but behold, a body you have prepared.
Well, and then I think we've talked, too, about that whole picture of his birth and all the other pictures. Like, you have the picture of him, like the shepherds. He's the shepherd.
Yep.
The king.
Yep.
The king.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have all these other things. It's really supposed to be a picture for us.
Right.
More than
right.
anything else. Do you know
right.
what I mean?
All of it. And that's why I'm saying by the Hebrew mind, they're like, wow. So we have this body prepared in an open box,
yeah.
a place of feeding. He's really out in the midst of the earth with the sky. I mean, think about even the pictures that we have of the birth.
The tabernacle?
So here we have the tabernacle opened up. Into a body that's living. So God says, I am no longer in a box contained. I am now in a body that you can eat. I'm in a body that has just exploded the box open. This is where I'm at. Of course. So we have him living and breathing as one of us. Now he's not just in the midst, but he's in a an actual live person that's walking around. So now we have a movable God, but a movable God who's staying with us and being able to act with us in relationship. So do you see how he's building this picture of his presence so that they begin to understand that it's bigger and more alive than they could ever have imagined before, that he can't be contained. And yet we have little by little these pictures of a box being exploded into a feeding trough, an open box.
Does it mean anything like, okay, so there's all the animals, right? I'm maybe looking way into this. And in this picture, you have all the animal sacrifices too,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But now in this picture, the animals aren't being sacrificed
right.
anymore, just
yep.
Jesus. So
yep.
The animals aren't,
yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The implications too of our bodies being a tabernacle.
Yeah, we're going to get there. It's even better than you think. So, so of course, what's the eventual response to this body, to God's presence being there?
They don't want it.
They abuse it and actually destroy it, right? They say, no, thank you. We don't want his presence living and breathing and telling us that the box has been exploded. We like our box. We like containing God. Even if it really doesn't contain God. We like that place. Through all of these manifestations of God's presence, the cool thing is that God is allowing, once again, man to be in God's presence. More and more and more. Less and less limiting and more vital. With life, we have this. So let's just back up and remember that right from the very beginning, the picture of this is the picture of Eden, but the picture of this is also the picture of Christ. So you've done this a million times. You had it in your thing. The door is Jesus is the door, the way. The altar, Jesus is the sacrifice. The basin, he washes our sins. Jesus is the word that washes our sins. The light, Jesus is the light of the world. The bread, Jesus is the bread of life. The altar of incense, Jesus is our intercessor. The veil, our verse, Jesus' flesh has inaugurated a new way into the Holy of Holies. What's happening is all of the divisions that we put in place are being crumbled. He's all of these things, and he's walking among us. The altar, or the Ark of the Covenant. That's three things. Jesus is inside.
The manna.
Jesus is the manna. Jesus is the manna, the bread from heaven. Mm-hmm. Jesus is
the great high priest.
The rod that buds, mm-hmm. a great living high priest, mm-hmm. and the commandments. Jesus is the fulfillment of God's ways and laws. And the mercy seat. Jesus is our incarnate, merciful God who's going to be there in our presence. And the Shekinah glory, this is how Hebrews starts out. Jesus is the radiance of God. Radiance and Shekinah, same word if you were to connect Hebrew and Greek.
So when you say the increase, so you have this increase of access.
Mm-hmm.
Mhm. Because it was so in the beginning.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like you're going back to that
right.
way it was meant.
Right. Exactly. He said, "I'm going to restore it. I'm going to restore what I originally intended,
okay.
but I'm going to do it little by little, so that you will take it in. I'm going to treat you as children." And we talked about this. You can actually go through the books of the Bible as the stages of growth of a child. I think we did that for most of it. And you can see that. And so the same thing with the kids. We talked about the dolls. Do we give a little girl a real, how many of you let your daughter hold on to a brand new baby when she is 4 months old? You don't, right? You give her dolls first, right? You give them so that they learn. And then you give them a kitchen set so that they learn. And you give them all of that so that they learn. This is what God is doing with us. This is how he pictures Israel and us as babes growing up, so that we begin to learn and receive his presence more. So here comes the most exciting part. So Jesus is here, but then he leaves again. His presence leaves us. Of course, he returns for a little bit, and then he leaves again, right? So here we are again. Jesus' presence left again. So here we are, all the disciples, and it is the Feast of Weeks. The Feast of Weeks comes 50 days after the Feast of Harvest, the first harvest, first fruits. So they are celebrating it, and they continue to remain, even though they are now what we call Christians. They wouldn't have called themselves that then, but they continue to remain Jews as well. And so they are going to be celebrating the Feast of Weeks. There was nothing that Jesus said about not celebrating these things, because, as we know from Leviticus, they're all pictures of him. So they were celebrating the Feast of Weeks. And where would they celebrate the Feast of Weeks and all be together? But in the temple court. Let's go back to the tabernacle. What does the court represent?
The whole
earth. The earth, where man is, right? Okay, they're in the court. And they're listening to the readings of the Feast of Weeks. And that is, they would do three readings, but the first reading would be Exodus 19, where God comes down on Mount Sinai and comes down in thunder, with the sound of thunder and rushing fire and fire, he comes down. This is what they're hearing on that day, the passage of God coming back down to earth with wind and fire. So they hear this in Exodus 19, then they would have heard Ezekiel 1 and 2, hearing that again, the rushing wind and the fire, and Habakkuk they would have heard as well. Interesting, today the Jews listen to the book of Ruth instead, which is really interesting because the book of Ruth, anybody remember, is the book of the kinsman redeemer that comes back and redeems. So this is what the disciples are listening to. They're in the temple court. They're listening to Exodus 19. God came with fire and thunder and shaking. And all of a sudden, what happens? It happens. It happens again. And his glory comes in fire over their heads. And they, Jesus said, I am the vine and you are the branches. And now, in the hearing of Exodus 19, it happens again that God's presence once again comes, not in the Holy of Holies, in the box, not in the holy place, but in the court where the men are. And he comes on each one of them. And so we have the flames coming on top of the branches, and we have us, the men, being the tree of life. Here we have now, what has changed dramatically? God has come over and over and over again. He's now exploded the box. I'm no longer in a box. Now, where am I? I'm in the people. You can settle for being in the presence of God, or now you get the choice of the presence of God being in you. Here's this whole consummation of the ages coming. Here's the flip. It's like everything's been coming, coming, coming. All of a sudden, it just flips. And here now we have the restoration being seen. And when I look at this, I think, how many times have we said, I just don't see restoration happening? Really?
Well, when you see transformed lives, you do.
Yes. And you see that the presence is in people. And there's a lot of people that say, I love to be in the presence of the Lord. Absolutely great, fantastic. Every one of those did too. But we have a different choice. We can have the presence in us as the disciples found. And so what they have then now is this body prepared, but now the body has grown. Right?
And it's being fruitful and multiplying.
And it's being fruitful and multiplying. Because who's in the court at that day? It's people from all different countries. And it says, how many were added to that day? 3,000 men from all different countries were added that day, had fire on their head, were branches that began to glow with the glory of the Lord, and then they left and they went out and they began to fill the earth. Mm-hmm. And so we have, he's already told them, you are a royal priesthood, a holy nation, you are the branch. And then in Matthew, he says, you are the light of the world. What? I thought Jesus was the light of the world. No, you are the light of the world. A city set on a, and the word is not hill, the word is mountain. A city set on a mountain cannot be hidden. Therefore, let your light so shine before men that what? They may see your good works and glorify God who is in heaven. This is Eden all over again. This is the mandate again to Adam. Go fill the earth with my glory, that my glory might be multiplied and filled more and more and more. You are the light of the world now. My body has grown and multiplied. It's not a box anymore. The box has been exploded open. It's now a body, and it's not just one body. It's bodies multiplying, which is why we have the Feast of the First Fruits, the first resurrection of Jesus. And then we have 50 days later, the celebration of it multiplying. So we look at those feasts and we realize it's all in the same picture of Eden being restored, of the sanctuary, the dwelling place of God being restored, and not just restored in its original, but growing, the original intent of Eden, that his glory now continues to grow and fill and fill. Yep.
But even just like how we're dressed in white linen,
yep,
we become that surrounding of his presence. Like when he comes, and when we fully express his presence, we're in the white linen.
Yep. And we're even more. So let's go to Revelation. Revelation 21, 22. We've gone there so many times. If you want to look at it, go. What we have in Revelation then is the consummation of it all, because Jesus then returns, and remember when he returns and everyone comes up to meet him, you remember this in Revelation? That is us going out to get the bridegroom. He's coming to the place he's going to dwell. It's not us going away. It's us coming to meet him out on the path that he's coming into. We're joined again with the body. The body gets filled. It says also that heaven and earth now come together. Full consummation, where that veil separated Eden, eternity, God's dwelling place from the earth, from heavens and the earth. Now it's all coming together in Revelation. We have that coming together. And it says that it's the mountain, the city on the mountain, Jerusalem, who is the bride that comes together in full glory of God. And then it says, then it starts to give us measurement, which is really weird. Remembering, though, the Hebrews' mindset. They think in pictures. And as soon as they hear the measurements, mm-hmm. what do they know? Yeah, they know more than just the tabernacle. What part of the tabernacle do they know? This is the Holy of Holies. This is what has come down and filled the earth. It's the Holy of Holies that has come down, the actual presence of God. It is now not contained. It is out. It is consummated with the earth, and it's completely being filled. Every space is being filled with the Holy of Holies, the place that God was. And then just so that they're not confused, God is not going to remain in a box that says there is no temple. For God is its temple, it says in Revelation. So we have this. Yes, I want you to remember that it's the Holy of Holies that's coming down. It's the place of God's dwelling that's coming down. This is what's going to fill the earth coming down. It's God's glory, God's presence that comes down and fills it. And so then we have in Revelation 21 and 22, this picture, and it talks first of all about it's a city made of pure gold, and we remember Eden, and we remember the tabernacle, that it's a place of gold. It has precious stones as the foundation, and we've talked about that before, but it's these pictures that we've had all along. And any Hebrew reader would read this and go, well, this is, I know what this is. I see, this is God's place.
You know what's really funny is how people tell us to think of heaven as like all our favorite things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, let's make it about us. You know what I mean? And everything we like. And yet,
yes, over and over and over. Yes, yeah.
We think what we like is what's most
right.
fulfilling. You know?
Right.
And God all along keeps saying, it's in my presence that good is. It's in my presence that life is. And this is what he keeps saying over again. You keep pushing it away, but this is life. And I'm going to keep on coming over and over again until in Revelation we have that consummation. Then it says, of course, that God's light illumines everything. It says there is no sun or moon. There is no need for light because God himself is the light and the Lamb is the lamp that holds the flame. And then it says that one of the most beautiful things. It says the kings and the nations will bring in their glory into this place. What we have here is the kings, the place we think about the royalty being a little bit higher than us, the heavens, and the nations, the earth, all the borders are down. There is nothing that isn't going to be overcome with God's glory. All the glory. So the glory of kings and nations, they will not hoard it for themselves, but it will break down all the barriers, and all the glory will be here, flattened all over the earth, all over all existence, everywhere. We then, of course, have and then it says, and then there was a river that flowed from the throne of God. And so we see this river, and it says it's the river of the water of life. This river of the water of life that flows from the throne. And it flowed from Eden, the place where God dwelled. And then, of course, we have the tree of life. And I think this is the most interesting passage because it says the tree of life, singular, was on all sides of the river. The body of Christ is everywhere. It's a singular body, but it's in all of our bodies. We are the light of the world. We are the tree of life now in the full consummation. And we are all along that river of water, of life.
Where are we?
Revelation, 22? I feel like that's all we just keep on camping on these things, but it really is so that you understand this picture has always been there. And then it talks about that we, his bondservants, shall serve him. And as soon as you see that word, it's the priestly serve, we as priests. So what it's doing is it's rolling every picture it ever had of us in here. You are the light. You're the tree of life. You're the priests. And you get to be able to see his face, which all along, when he's developing it, you can't see his face, you can't see his face. We see it in Jesus' face. We become his face. We get to see his face and be completely reflective of him. And it says again, the Lord shall illumine them and they shall reign. What it's saying is, because you are right in his full presence now, your flame is just always reflecting of him, all the time. And what happens with the tree of life? It gives off fruit all the time. It never ceases to give off fruit. So in other words, it's multiplying and filling the earth with, this tree has all these flames of light, these reflections of God's glory over and over again. And what's it going to do? Heal the nations. It's going to destroy all of the borders and barriers that anybody ever had. And here, we get to be a part of that in Eden. This is the consummation of what he intended for Eden. It wasn't just for Adam to be there or Adam and Eve to be there. It was for his glory to go throughout all of his images and go out and just be reflecting him all the time. with great glory. I mean, what better picture is there than to be that tree of life that has flames coming out of its branches?
But that isn't automatic. It isn't like everyone has the tree of life in them.
Nope.
Unless they have...
Unless it gets lit, right?
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, what does that then mean to me? That I have a resident sanctuary, or that I have the choice to have a resident sanctuary in us. It means, from our verse that we've memorized, that we have full and confident access. And when it says Jesus has inaugurated this new and living way, when we see the word new, it is he has now given you a new creation way. You are, it's of the new world, the eternal world, not this world, not this transactional world. You now have this transformational ability in you. You have this, you don't have to be confined to a box, because God is not confined to a box, and he is in you. So there's a lot of, and I want us to start thinking about the boxes that we made in the very beginning of Hebrews. We talked about that. We have full and confident access because it's also a living access. It's no longer a static thing somewhere else. It's living in me. It's not just that it's available, but it's me. It's actually me. I think this is one of those really hard things, because we always say we always have availability of being in God's presence. We are God's presence.
We talk about coming into his presence.
Yes. 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 So there's thinking about that. Wow, like I'm embodying his presence wherever I go. Am I hiding it in a cloud, behind a veil, behind all sorts of things? Or am I letting my box be exploded, letting it be opened to be fed, for other people to be feeding out of?
Well, in the city of the hill, right?
Yes.
I mean, it changes it to be approachable versus, like, separate.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's not us. It's in him, in us.
Right. But
this is why
yep. Hebrews is all about trusting that everything is grace, trusting what God is doing. The trust is how the fact that we are his tabernacle opens up. It's that, I think I have it somewhere, Psalm 125, those who trust in the Lord are as Mount Zion, which cannot be shaken, but abides forever. It's the trust that everything he's doing is good, that he is giving grace, that everything he's doing is trying to make his presence and his glory be filled throughout the earth. Just, he wants to explode us. He wants to open us up so that we become feeding troughs, that we become places that people say, wow, there's a light on a hill. Think about all those pictures that he gives us.
But we still want to look like this one with the pretty angels.
Yes, and gold and beautiful in a box. Yes, exactly.
Instead of the word you have, yeah. Is vulnerable.
Yes.
And showing that I do make mistakes. And I'm not all that pretty.
Yes.
But I want, you know, yep. we put up this facade.
Right. We do exactly what the Israelites do. We say, if I look good, then people see, we think, oh, then people see God. No, what they see is the box then. If I don't look good, then they get to see God's glory.
And that's why Jesus had to not look good. I mean, yes. That was the whole idea. Like, there was nothing about him that should have attracted us to him.
Yes.
You know?
And actually, the cross was very ugly.
Yes.
Yeah. So the gift of the cross is in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It was maybe ugly, but it's also an invitation.
Yes.
Well, we're so worried about reflecting life that we forget the death part.
Yes.
Do you know
yes.
what I mean?
No, you
exactly.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, and really, how many of us want to be the baby in the manger that can be taken for food? Really? We don't. And yet, we've talked about this as well. The Eucharist, the good gift, is about us also becoming the body broken. for others to take, to thank and
that,
share.
That'd be great. Like, we can't be food if we're not feeding.
Right.
You know,
right.
The continual in
right.
and out.
Right. Yes.
In and out
yes.
Thing.
Yes.
Okay, the fruit of, so the tree of life, plugged with the fruit, immediately you start thinking, like, no one's ever connected that with fruit of the spirit that I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just think, why is it one fruit? Blah, blah, blah. But then you know
right.
what I mean?
Yes, yes.
Like, here it is, the fruit of the spirit has all these different things that it comes out in, just like in the tree of life,
mm-hmm.
it has all these different types of fruits, even though that's not how I took it.
Right. Well, yeah, because we look at that tree and we go, what? It has 12 different fruits?
How could it have different fruits? Right.
And how can one tree be on all sides of the river? And,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. See, what he's doing is, Eden doesn't look like what you think. Eden is so much more expansive.
Right. And not contained by what?
And not contained in a box in any way.
The picture of grafting. And he talks about
yes.
grafting in. And they do graft trees. Like
right.
Brother
right.
trees that have grapefruit,
yep.
oranges, and lemons.
Yeah.
In one tree because the farm would be for
right.
grafted.
Yeah.
It's right by the kitchen door.
Cool.
No,
that's pretty cool.
That
wow.
That's pretty cool. I want one of those.
Yeah.
So, quickly. So, what does this resident sanctuary, what is that a place of for us? From Hebrews, from our chapter here in 9, we see that it's redemption. That I am ransomed from being away from his presence eternally. That here, he did everything possible so that his presence now lives in me. There's nothing that can change that. It's also a time of reformation or to reform, and that word means to set right, to set what was intended to be. This is the time of reformation as he's setting right his glory in us so that we can fill the earth. In Psalm 73, if I had time to go through, I would, because it's a great passage. There's like 17 verses about I'm watching everybody in the world, and they're transactional, and they're not just getting away with it, or they're prospering, and I'm getting really mad, and this is not fair. And then he said, and I was so mad I was going to say this to you, God, until it says, I went into your sanctuary. And then I understood their end. Then I saw from your perspective. It is in your sanctuary where I get perspective for reality, what's real, as opposed to what I see. So his sanctuary being in us, I get perspective on reality, particularly in the midst of I'm not getting good things and they are. Reflection, it's a place where I, and this is all in Psalm 73, a place where I can be guided to see his glory. I can see that this is grace, and therefore I can reflect that it's grace to others. He's a refuge, a place where I can find strength. That's in me, not somewhere I need to go. And rest, and when he talks about rest here, it says it's a place where I can be whole. I can be exactly who I am because I have him in me. I mean, it's not like I can hide in a box. Oh, I look all, I'm golden shiny, God. And God's in me going, are you kidding? No, I'm golden shiny in you. And I'm trying to let people see it. And then I can be a true witness, a flame that actually reflects. And all of that then gives me the ability to be a sanctuary for others. It frees me up. Like, I don't have to try to control my life. I don't have to try to say, ooh, if I just do this. I don't have to do any transactions because I have living within me his presence, his glory.
When I
exactly.
like your reflection, that, like, we can't. The only reason that makes it shiny and reflective is the light.
Yes.
So no matter what we
right.
put around
mm-hmm.
ourselves,
exactly.
We can't make
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And every time we try to cloak it in anything,
mm-hmm.
nobody gets to see his glory. So when I cloak myself in gold and beauty and skinny bodies, then he doesn't get to be seen. And then, of course, that Psalm 125 tells us it's by trusting him that we get to be true witnesses, that we get to be Mount Zions. And so thinking about Eden, eternity, God's presence, God's glory, Mount Zion, the tabernacle, the temple, you, the temple of God, all the same thing. So see that thread throughout. And God says, trust me, receive my rule as a gift. Receive that grace, knowing whatever I'm bringing you, I'm working good. Going back to what it was like in Eden. Basically, he says, live with me in harmony. I'm here in you. Live with me in harmony. The struggle you have is because you're like, oh, I want to be separate. But you're not. He's in you, and he wants to fill you completely with his glory, the shalom. And that's shalom. That's actually what I'm wearing. This, in Hebrew, says shalom. That is what he wants for us, and not just for us, so that the whole earth can be filled with his glory. Yeah. Is that not beautiful? That's, and we get to be a part of that. We get to be trees of life.
Well, that's why I kept on going back in my mind, consider Jesus.
Yes.
Consider Jesus.
Yes.
Because I just, it makes me fall in love with him.
Yes.
When you realize what it really, what it entails, even though I can't wrap my head around it, but it's, yeah, Jesus.
Yep.
That's all that we need.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just so beautiful. So we go back to the very beginning of where we were in Hebrews. And I kept all your boxes. I have them all here. Remember, some of you weren't here. We each got a box. And we named how we can make sure our box stays intact, right? And yet he says, no, I'm in you, and I want to explode your box. I want to make it open. Our boxes would have lids. Open. And do you remember what's inside? Yeah, it's a tree. That's what's inside of us. If we allow him to deconstruct that box, to let it be a place of nourishment for others.
Mm-hmm. And the leaves of healing.
And the leaves of healing.
And where they can be grafted in.
Yes, yes. So it's a beautiful picture. So for us to hold on to our Western ideas of God is love. I mean, what does that conjure anything for you? God is love. We don't even know what love means. But when we say God is light and the tree of life, and we are the light of the world and the tree of life, that should take your breath away. That, those pictures are God's. If God chose to use that way to reveal himself, is it not worthy of using that? Yes. Then it gives picture to God is love. God is light. God is love. We start to look at that and go, oh, that is beautiful. So, Father, we thank you that you would deem so much a desire to live with us, not just live in the midst of us, not in the midst of our land, not in a box, not in a place where we can go. But Father, that you would allow us to be your temple, your dwelling place, that your presence would exist in us, that we, again, might be lights to the world, trees of life that bring healing. Father, may we be not boxes making sure that people measure up and fit inside our box, but Father, may we allow you to explode our walls, that we might be an open tree of life, that we might come to others as a place of healing and receiving and a reflection of your glory, so that we might multiply, be fruitful, and fill the earth with you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for exploding for us.
Sorry. Yeah.